Kieran Perkins, Olympic legend in these parts, has taken the off-field role as the chief executive of the Australian Sports Commission. So he'll have a key guiding hand from here in non-professional sport, and particularly as we head towards a Victorian Commonwealth Games and the Brisbane Olympics in a decade's time. Kieran came by the studio earlier in the week. I played you his thoughts around the transgender ruling from FINA, and that's had broad coverage since. This is the rest of our conversation. Kieran Perkins, welcome to SEN.
Thanks, Jared. It's great to be here.
4 months into the job, what's your grasp of it thus far?
Oh, look, it's big, it's challenging, but it's also great. I mean, I'm so happy and excited to be involved in sport at this level. I think, since my athletic days, moving into corporate, I've become very aware that I'm much more happy, hands dirty, in there doing the work. And There's nothing more hands dirty than being involved in sports administration than Australia.
Are there tension points everywhere? How are you navigating your way across the minefield at the start?
Look, it's actually one of the funny things, because a lot of my friends and people that I know sort of said, "Oh my God, you're going into a government role. Like, why would you want to do that? Government's so difficult." It's like, yeah, politics in sport is 1,000 times worse than politics. So I know what I'm getting in for, and it's entirely my fault. And look, the reality is, yeah, there's minefields everywhere. But what it comes down to at its core is that Aussies love sport, and everyone that's involved in sport is extremely passionate. They're extremely committed. You know, there's a massive volunteer base that makes sport in Australia run. And all of those people have very strong views on what's needed to enable their sport to be successful. And so, you know, the difficult navigation point for me is, how do I get all of those sports to come together to recognise that, you know, there's not enough money, resource, capacity or capability in Australia to do everything that everyone wants to do. So let's work together to get the best outcomes that we can with the resource that's available so that we can continue to succeed.
Have you brought a personal philosophy around elite sport and grassroots, which has always been a tension point around funding and the finite pot?
Only that they are inextricably linked, and neither can be successful without the other. You know, I do think in times we've had different strategies that have fallen one way or the other, but that simple fact is that if you don't have a massive participation base of people that come out of their experience as advocates for sport, you don't get the coaches, the administrators, the volunteers, and the parents of the next generation. And of that big participation base, you'll find your little nuggets of gold, your talented athletes, and then how we bring them through so that they're successful and then they can inspire the next generation to want to be able to achieve. All of that stuff needs each other to deliver on, and there's different mechanisms to deliver it. There's different community engagement to deliver it. And then you've got to split it up as well into the recognition that there's professional sport versus non-professional sport. Yep. And the very, very big differences in the way those are administered, delivered, funded and all of that. But the reality is you ask me my philosophy. They are both equally important, and each relies on the other equally. And the solutions might be different, but anyone that wants to just skew hard one way or the other without addressing both is really setting us up for long-term failure.
You lived the journey of the non-professional sport and swimming, and probably have watched the football codes absolutely explode over the two decades. How far apart are the two now in your eyes?
Look, in some areas they are galaxies apart, and in other areas they're extremely close. I think that you know, coming back a little bit to my earlier comment about how we sort of strategically work together, you know, what the professional sports, and let's be honest, AFL, which stands head and shoulders above all of the professional sports in terms of community engagement, development of talent, and bringing through to make sure that you get every year when those 1,500 odd young men and women turn up for the draft, they are the best athletic talent that the country's got. You know, they've done an incredible job of that, and that talent ID and that capacity to engage and bring people through the system end to end, you know, I would argue the professional sports are probably light years in front of the non-professional sports in that regard. And there is also, I think, a big gap in the way that the system engages the community in understanding requirement and how things are delivered. You know, there's parts of the professional sporting environment that do an amazing job of having the whole community understand what they need and supporting them to get what they need, and other parts of our sporting system in the non-professional that, you know, other than every 4 years when they turn up at a Olympic or Paralympic Games or at the Commonwealth Games, we don't really give them a second thought. And, you know, that leaves big gaps in their capacity and ability to deliver. But we can learn from each other. I think one of the things as well that I sort of need to also reinforce in that dialogue is that, you know, my recognition of the AFL's great success and to a not quite the same but similar degree, the NRL, is in no ways critical of their capability and what they deliver. I think, you know, there's an element of jealousy for the non-professional sports to think about how we could possibly replicate it. But we've got to learn from each other and work together. And that, to me, is the biggest challenge. How do we actually give people the capacity to step up and engage in a what's possible conversation about how we work? You know, one of the things I talked about, I mentioned the 1,500-odd athletes that go into the draft. I believe about 75 get through. What happens to the other 1,425?
Yep.
Almost all of them who have been cricketers, tennis players, basketball players, volleyball players, rowers throughout their junior life, they focus on AFL for a couple of years, unfortunately don't make it through to that league. Why isn't there then an easy pathway for them back into their original sport for the chance for them to represent their country and win a gold medal? You know, that sort of system thinking is the bit where I just don't think we've got it right. And, you know, we need to learn from each other and work together more.
We're coming out of Tokyo, which reminded us, I think, how much the Olympics means to Australia and, frankly, how much we enjoy winning at the Olympics and how the national psyche and happiness is linked to that. And we've got Brisbane in 2032. So is there a decade-long project to go? So we know that. We know what a home games looks like. So this is our span to work in this space.
It's being developed, and I think that's probably one of the things coming into the role that everyone in the system acknowledges is a gap that shouldn't have been there. But, you know, let's give ourselves a little bit of credit. We won the Olympics in October last year. Having said that, though, you know, we do have this dubbed green and gold decade now. And you think about the Commonwealth Games in Victoria, you think about it being bookended by the Olympic Paralympic Games in 32, but we've got World Cups, World Championships across numerous sports coming through that period of time. There has to be a strategic view on how we deliver for that. And the thing that I'm really pushing in the dialogue at the moment, and you know, the commission is doing that. There's other pieces of work that are being done in the National Institute Network, Paralympics Australia, the AOC and the Commonwealth Games. Like, there's a lot of work being done to start to uncover what the opportunity is and what we need to do to deliver in the long term. But what is publicly dominating the dialogue right now is infrastructure. And while we need infrastructure and it's important, I hope very, very, very soon people understand that all that infrastructure is the opportunity for the field of play to go well, and how the games is judged and how all of our performances are judged will only be about the field of play. And so, yes, let's get the infrastructure right, but don't think that solves the games. Don't think that solves any of the how it's going to be the best ever dialogue that we want it to come from. Actually, the thing that we will ultimately be judged on will be how our athletes perform. Yep. And that work needs to start now because, you know, in 32, the 12, 13, 14-year-olds of today are going to be the athletes competing there. And, you know, and I also, again, without going off on a tangent, also think we need to take responsibility for the fact that, you know, Brisbane in 32 shouldn't be a finish line. It's a springboard. You know, it's an opportunity for us to invest in the next 10 years to make the sports system in this country sustainable, to deliver on that great participation experience, the advocacy to drive the coaching, administrators and volunteerism that our sports founded off, to get us to an elite competition and be successful. but for it to be sustainable and to just continue on and continue on and continue on. And that's probably not a lesson that we delivered well in Sydney after the 2000 games. But let's learn from that and let's do it better next time.
Kieran Perkins is in the studio. I love a tangent. When you think back, was the drive, when you're a kid, was the dream an Olympic gold medal? And do you think the kids of today are presented with the same dream that you had?
So my experience, no, it wasn't until I probably sort of got enough into the system that it became possible. What I actually loved about sport as a young person was the community I was in. I love turning up every day with those other people in the squad, training, being part of that social group, being included in an environment that made me grow, push myself to be better, but also feel comfortable that I had that community around me, that family around me. And I wasn't a particularly successful young athlete. So the stretch to go from that to I could be an Olympian was enormous. And you know, I don't know that my aspiration lined up to it anyway. I just loved the environment. And then as I got to sort of that 13, 14 age group, which in swimming is when you're starting to tip into the start of your professional life in some respects. That's when I kind of started to perform better and thought, oh, well, maybe I could go to, you know, what's the next meet? What's the next meet? What's the next meet? And see that. What I would say, though, is that I definitely in my entire swimming career looked up to and aspired to be like those Olympians that we saw. The Lisa Currys, the Tracy Wickhams. I mean, you know, historically Murray Rose, John Conrads, Dawn Fraser. You know, all of these incredible names, and there was a cultural element to it that I connected with, and it's one of the things I get a little bit shirty about whenever any athlete tries to tell you that they're not a role model. The reality is that the minute you put yourself into the spotlight and you are competing at the highest level and being successful, young people want to be you and be like you. And so I was really fortunate that I had some amazing role models who were incredible human beings who you know, delivered amazing things in the sporting field, but also in their life outside of sport. And so they inspired me and I connected with them and I wanted to be a part of that system. It wasn't until I was older that I thought, and maybe I could be a gold medalist too. And I think that's, you know, that again is part of that cycle of sport, right? You know, the young people, we want them to have a great engaging experience so that they become advocates for sport. And one of the most significant drivers in getting them there in the first place is when they see their heroes on the world stage in Tokyo achieving what they're achieving, and often seeing that they're just human beings. You know, I think one of my favorite moments in Tokyo, and it's probably uncool for me to say this, but one of my favorite moments in Tokyo was when Kaylee McEwen won a gold medal and dropped the F-bomb on camera, which of course there was lots of people who got horrifically offended by that. And while we wouldn't promote that's the right way to approach it, what better moment to show the world that this person, who is one of the most extraordinary athletes that Australia's ever produced, is a human being. And as a human being, she can inspire the next generation, and it's relatable, and it's something that, you know, everyone can potentially connect with, which was, and there was a lot of examples of that in Tokyo that we could talk about with a lot of the performances that happened over there. But it's certainly what I love about sport.
So I'm curious on your perspective of the household names we had for a couple of weeks. There are a few that have endured, but not quite as many as I would have imagined. Like we came away from Tokyo and we had an awesome foursome men's and women's crew, but they haven't gone on and done golden belly ads.
Yeah.
I was curious as to what your take out is for, we were captivated for about a month, and then whether that has had the hold that I thought it might and don't suspect that it has.
No, and look, and it's one of those really big topics that, you know, I don't want to position myself as the grumpy old man saying back in my day, but you know, back in my day, I think what people missed is that, you know, people like the Awesome Foursome that did their Goulburn Valley ads and the Lisa Currys of the world who was an Uncle Toby's ambassador forever, and you know, the Nutri-Grain Iron Men of the day, like, yep, all of that. there's this kind of, I think, unfortunately, perception that has been perpetuated a little bit that because they won, the money flooded through. Actually, because they won, it opened the door. The sponsorships and the commercial connections and the publicity and the profile that they got was because of an enormous amount of hard work those people did to position themselves in the public eye to be that. Because if you think about Olympic sport, the vast majority of them, we compete really once every 4 years. There's world championships and Commonwealth Games and trials and national events that happen in between. But none of those events ever really draw the same level of attention as an Olympics does. And so, you know, the question then becomes, well, one, how does the sport do a much, much better job of, you know, getting their athletes and getting the activity of their sport embedded in the psyche of the population so that Tokyo is not a surprise or the next Olympics in Paris is not a surprise. We already know the personalities. We know who they are, what they're aiming for, and the type of achievement that we could expect. How does that get set up? But then how do the athletes also understand that, you know, if they want to be have that strong public profile that they can commercialize, they've got to work just as hard out of the water as they do in the water for that. It's not just going to come, you know, and it's a whole sports system conversation that is challenging because unfortunately it gets dismissed as the athletes are entitled. And I don't think that's right or helpful. It's actually, how are we mentoring them? How are we educating them? How are we helping them connect with the reality of the circumstance that they're in to give them the opportunity if they choose to go down that path with the right mentors and examples sitting behind them to support them on their way through. And, you know, it is one of the big disconnects between professional and Olympic sports. Professional sports, they've got a whole machine around them that and weekly games through the season that's putting those individuals in the spotlight. You know, the Olympic sports athletes have to work a hell of a lot harder to get the same profile.
The next major event is the Commonwealth Games next month. You'll be there. There is a modern tendency, I think, to run down the Commonwealth Games, but it is a central part of every soaring Australian athlete's CV that there is. Mm. Is what's the modern Commonwealth Games to you?
Look, the modern Commonwealth Games, I think, in many ways, still fits the original billing, which was it is the stepping stone to the ultimate glory being the Olympics. You know, there is only one other major multi-sport, multi-nation event that happens in the world, and that's the Commonwealth Games. It happens every 4 years in between the Olympic cycle. And the Commonwealth nations are fortunate enough that it only includes us. And so you have this environment where the athletes go into a village like the Olympics. They compete against other nations like the Olympics in an environment where it is very, you know, intense, tight, and, you know, nationally competitive. Like, you align to your nation a lot more at those games than you do maybe at a world championships as an individual athlete anyway. And so, you know, the Commonwealth Games is the ultimate dress rehearsal. Like, if you can go to the Commonwealth Games and succeed and learn from that environment, the Olympics will be a much easier experience for you. What I'd overlay on top of that, of course, is again, coming back to our you know, the last question, it is also one of those epic profile moments for our Australian athletes because the country as a whole engages with the Commonwealth Games. It's an important event for Australia and Australians, and we will pay attention to it. And so the athletes who can go there and that succeed, if they, you know, take advantage of that and utilise it as a springboard towards then, you know, the Paris Olympics, it just builds a much better cycle of opportunity for them. I think where the Commonwealth Games has probably got a little bit of work to do is in how they start to modernise the way the Olympics has been forced to do. I think the Com Games hasn't felt the same pressure so far around that. But when you look at the new sports coming into the Olympics and you look at the way you know, that environment has started to, you know, contemplate what young people are interested in, what young people are doing, and how you engage that into their system, it's a lot more powerful. But I'd also argue on the flip side, the Comm Games is doing a much, much better job of inclusion because, of course, the para athletes compete at the Comm Games in the Comm Games, whereas the Olympics still holds it as a separate event that the Paralympics run. And so, you know, they can learn from each other, absolutely, but it is it's an exciting stepping stone. And I do think credit where it's due, you know, the bid for Victorian 2026 is an extraordinary reimagining of the Commonwealth Games for a country like Australia. And I think having the sports regionally and I hope creating legacy within those regions to provide community support and facilities and talent development is absolutely critical because as a Queenslander and an Olympian, I like to remind my my friends, family and Maroon brethren that while the Olympics are in Brisbane and the Paralympics are in Brisbane in 32, the talent that will represent Australia there does not all exist in Southeast Queensland and will not only come from Southeast Queensland. And we have to have a system that develops talent everywhere to be successful. And I think the Victorian Commonwealth Games is going to be an awesome reminder of that when we see all our athletes competing here.
It's great to have a long-form chat with you, Kieran. Let's pick these up as we work our way through the year, shall we?
Oh, there's plenty more that'll come up, no doubt. I'm happy to keep catching up.
Kieran Perkins in the studio. He is the Chief Executive of the Australian Sports Commission. Kieran Perkins is going to fast become one of the most influential figures in Australian sports administration, and it feels like the big picture is in pretty good hands.